Welcome to the WP Builds Podcast, bringing you the latest news, interviews, and fun for the WordPress community. Now, welcome your host, Nathan Wrigley.
Hello there, and welcome once again to the WP Builds Podcast. You've reached episode number 457, which has a very short title. Its title is Building a Human-Centered Web by Saying No to AI. Andy Bell on Ethics, Agency Life, CSS, and the Open Web. See? Extremely short. It was published on Thursday the 19th of February, 2026. My name's Nathan Wrigley, and before we begin, just one very short bit of housekeeping. If you like what we do over at WP Builds, and I know many of you do because of our analytics and our subscriber list and things like that, well, if you've got a product or service in the WordPress space and you would like to get it mentioned in our podcast around about here in the episode, but also towards the end of the episode, well, I've got some good news for you. You can do that. Head to wpbuilds.com/advertise to find out more. It will give you some information about the different things that we do to help product and service companies in the WordPress space get their bits and pieces noticed. If that's not your bag and you don't really like reading things online, well, just send me an email, admin@wpbuilds.com, and I'm sure we can sort something out. Just also to mention, if you don't know, we have a Monday show. We do it live. It's called This Week in WordPress. I repackage it as a podcast episode the following day, so every Tuesday. But if you want to join us live for that, you can do that. wpbuilds.com/live. It's at 2 p.m. UK time every Monday. And then, like I said, we repackage it into a podcast episode on a Tuesday. And we'll also be sending you another podcast episode every single Thursday. If you want to keep updated, wpbuilds.com/subscribe to find out more. Okie dokie, what have we got for you today? Well, today it's a chat not necessarily strictly focused on WordPress because I am chatting to Andy Bell. Now, Andy Bell has all the chops, all the credibility you could possibly muster in the agency and particularly CSS and open web space. I actually saw him at a conference in London in 2025 and thought it would be good to get him on the podcast. And so here he is. And we talk about a whole range of things, a whole piece about his agency's decision to really push against AI and to not use AI in any way, shape or form, not to produce content with AI, not to work for companies that are involved in the AI space. So that's a really interesting topic. But then we also spend a lot of time talking about the updates to CSS and how it's now becoming a real proper language, which is going to help you develop on the web, the open web, open standards, and a whole lot more. It really was delightful connecting with Andy, and hopefully you'll be able to go and find the different bits and pieces that he's doing. He's got CSS courses, he's got an agency, and his work is truly incredible. I hope that you enjoy it. I am joined on the podcast by Andy Bell. Hello.
Hello.
You have, without a doubt, the easiest to pronounce name that I've ever had on an interview. Not quite often it's an unpronounceable name to me, at least, but Andy Bell, nice and straightforward. Here comes a dad joke for you. Well done for getting out of erasure. Ta-da! Okay, and with that out of the
way. I can never compete with the Andy Bell. Never.
The Andy Bell. Those of you who weren't born, I guess, any time in the last 30 years will not understand how low that joke was. Anyway, moving on. Andy's joining me today. I've just sort of given him the potted history of how come I've come across Andy, and it goes a bit like this. I'm going to read it into the record quickly. Andy has been working on the web, I think, for 15 plus years. Andy, I think it's fair to say, is one of the few people out there who really understands CSS. If you're like me and can pretend to understand it, you can get away with quite a lot. But I think it's fair to say that Andy really does understand CSS. If you were listening to this podcast many years ago, David Wormsley and I split off and did a different podcast all about using CSS to build websites. That then led to me finding Andy. I subscribe to his content, and so I've summarized your life.
Thanks.
Do you want to do a better job and tell us who you actually are?
Well, I think you've done a pretty good job there, but so I got into CSS out of spite more than anything else.
Oh, this is good.
I'm a traditional designer, so that's what I started as. And then I used to design websites and hand over PSDs to developers, and then they'd send me something back that just resembled something abstract rather than accurate. And I was already sort of messing around with Flash and stuff at the time, and I was like, I'm sure I can fix this myself. And then out of that, I was like, I'm sure I can just learn CSS. It can't be that hard, can it? And then the rest is history, really. I got really into writing CSS, so much so that I can't remember the last time I did any design work.
Oh,
so
interesting.
Yeah. Complete switch, yeah. I mean, it does help that I've got a very talented designer that works for me, so I am fully redundant on that front. But I find working in the browser just so much more rewarding than drawing rectangles in Figma. So.
I like it. Did you properly obsess about it then? You know, with the benefit of hindsight, did you look back and just really go down a bit of a rabbit hole with CSS?
Yeah, I was... It's something I've been sort of saying for a while. I see CSS as a design language. It's a programming language for designers, and it speaks to you. Like when if you're that way inclined, if you think like a designer already, like it makes a lot of sense. Even down to like the way that the cascade and sort of specificity work. A word I can't say, by the way, because I'm also Northern. But really, really
that's unfortunate,
not helpful
in your line of work.
yeah, it is, isn't it? It's like a doctor not being able to say medicine.
That's right, yeah. Well, it's okay. They can't write.
Neither can I. But that's it, yeah. So it's always resonated really, really well with me, CSS. And that was like in the old days as well. Like, the CSS we have now is unbelievable versus what we had at the time. And... yeah, it's just always been an interest of mine. I remember a conversation with a friend who did CSS consultancy about sort of 5-6 years ago, and it was just after CSS Grid came around, and he was like, I'm going to get out of the CSS world because I think the language is finished now.
That was just when it was getting interesting.
How wrong can you be? It's changed like almost unrecognizable since then. So yeah, but it's great. I love it. Absolutely love it. It's such a fun sort of language to work with.
So this is a WordPress podcast, and we've got this curious relationship with things like CSS, HTML, JavaScript, and what have you. In the a lot of that is taken away by bits and pieces that you add on top of WordPress, plugins, themes, and things like that. It kind of abstracts that away. And in many cases, it's kind of encouraging you to kind of more or less ignore the CSS behind the website. You might have a slider or a box to fill in, you know, like put a number in here and that represents the margin or the padding or what have you. And everything sort of takes place in front of your eyes. And I very much fell into that camp during the early days of CSS. So when we stopped using tables and CSS came along, I learned everything I could about CSS, but then kind of got into the whole WordPress thing and thought, okay, those UIs are now good enough for me. They'll do what I want. But this recent collaboration for this podcast I'm doing with David, it's called The No Script Show. And he's really fascinated in the same way that you were and probably still are. He is just absolutely taken by CSS. He's fascinated by it. And so he's peeled back the curtain to me. And I honestly didn't realize that it was as exciting as it was. We're almost at the point, it feels like, that most of the JavaScript that you ever wanted to move pixels around on a page are completely unnecessary now. And it's changing month by month, week by week. There's a few people that you can follow. I'll put their names in the show notes, Andy being one of them. But it really is like this language which allows you to do everything without the need for JavaScript necessarily.
Yeah.
And do you see this sort of trend continuing? Is there much work still to be done, or are we kind of?
Yeah. Oh, there's a huge amount to go. Yeah. Still. I do. So I think the browsers, they're working in really work really well with each other. So they interop stuff. Is great, and the focus seems to be good too. There's a few bits that I'm not overly bothered about. Like, there's been a lot of focus on masonry, for example, but it brings back with it some issues. So for example, if you shuffle the content in different orders to what the source order is, then it's going to affect the tabbing order for keyboard users.
Okay,
so
yep.
they need to address those sorts of things. And but then on the subject of like JavaScript, I think it's CSS now is putting JavaScript where it's supposed to be on the client side, which is it's supposed to deal with interaction and events and like you say, it's been used to move pixels around the page also in the past. It's even used to style UIs with like CSS and JS, which I've never truly understood why you'd want to do that. But I like to see it now as CSS is enabling JavaScript to be one of the pillars in its own right, as is HTML and then CSS. So it's creating that proper separation of concerns, which I think we've been asking and wanting for decades at this point. So yeah, I really like to see it, and it's only going to get better, the CSS, and it's only going to improve as time goes on. So you're never going to run out of things to learn with it because it's just so vast.
Yeah.
And capable.
Yeah, too. Yeah. Honestly, dear listener, if you haven't checked in the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 years on the state of CSS, it is transformational what has happened. Mm. It really has moved away from what you think it can do, like margins, padding, that kind of thing, to being able to do so many curious, interesting things. There are so many developments dropping all the time. There's lots and lots of real interest in out there. There's blogs that you can follow. There's people that you can follow. There's teams that you can follow, Mozilla and Chrome and all of those kind of people who are just pushing the boundaries. And Andy kind of feels like, well, it feels like you're in that mix somewhere. Is it kind of surprising to you that people view you as some sort of CSS expert, or is it, do you feel like it's a result of hard work done over many years?
I mean, yeah, there's been a lot of graft. I can never fully accept it. I think it's just that's just natural imposter syndrome, right?
Yeah.
I always like in these sorts of conversations say there's better people out there to listen to, but yeah, like. I think one thing that's benefited me in my career is having, well, it's not even really a niche. It's just having this like focal point. Like I'm designer and front end developer, but so I obviously deal with all of everything. But writing about CSS has always been more interesting to me than anything else.
Okay.
So I think it's just a case of volume and velocity of like the amount I've published over the years about specifically CSS stuff that you just become associated with it. And I'm not mad about it, to be honest, because it's the thing I'm most interested in anyway. So I'll keep doing it, and it seems to be paying off quite well. So yeah,
you've got several enterprises that I know of. There's maybe more strings to your bow, but there's the sort of work side of things, and you've got a very nice domain name. It's set.studio. Which is pretty cool. Is that a team of you? Expensive. Is that like a collection of freelancers? Yeah. How does that whole thing work?
There's a full team. Uh-huh. So there's four of us all together. So we've got me, got a Jason, our designer, Leanne, who runs our tech stuff, and then we've got Vicky, the producer. He's the nice person that clients get to speak
to.
That has to
be one.
She's the friendly face, yeah. But we'll organise them to within an inch of their lives. But yeah. They don't get to see me unless they're in trouble a lot of the time.
but you have had some really heavy-hitting clients. We'll get onto the Piccalilli stuff in a minute. But you've got you've got a real roster of some amazing clients. I mean, I was reading it earlier. The one that sticks out for me was the NHS, but there's a whole laundry list of them as well. It sort of feels from where I'm sitting that you represent this kind of like, oh, we want to be like Andy. We want these big sort of clients. You know, that is the goal, I suppose, of most agencies, to get these big clients. Is it all roses over there with the big clients, or can that be kind of interesting and fun?
The summary I like to use for big companies, the big ones, is they're really useful for your logo reel on your website, but they're absolutely horrifying to work with at the time. So I actually tend to our actual target client now in the agency is like sort of mid-level SMEs, like people were, the clients that we work best with are the ones where we can actually talk to the decision makers in the organization, like the high up decision makers, like founders and stuff. I think big companies are great, but they move at a glacial speed. And when you're an agency, that's really difficult to work like that, because you obviously work at a breakneck speed a lot of the time. So it's really complicated. But like I say, you get them on that logo reel and it really does add to the credibility of the place. So it's worth all the stress.
I kind of get the feeling that quite a lot of people use logo reels in a let's go for fraudulent way. I'm not entirely sure that when I see some web designers' websites that is, in fact, who they have worked with. But let's assume that Andy's telling the truth. Seems like an honest guy. Here we go. Google, the NHS, Harley Davidson, Ollie? Why did I say Ollie? I've no idea what Ollie is. Oracle. B-Sky-B, Unilever, the Natural History Museum, British Cycling, Capita, Vitality, Vice Media. Andy's head's swelling as we say these words. That's so impressive. I mean, well done. That is pretty remarkable.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. However, let's move on. You've also got this other sort of more educational piece, I guess, side to what you do, which is called Pick a Lily. Tell us about that. What are you doing over there?
So Pick a Lily started, first off, I thought, let's find a name that's really hard to say on spell.
Okay, good job. Success.
Tick. And then the reality is I spotted, I don't know how I found the domain, but I found the domain and I was like, that's a really cool domain name. So I bought it, no intention of doing anything with it. I just bought it. And then it just kept sort of like burning in the back of my skull. And I was like, I really need to do something with that domain. So it started off as a newsletter. Just a really simple newsletter. And then, so like 2018. And then it evolved into like my blog about CSS. So instead of like publishing as much on my personal site, I published on that instead, because I thought, I'll create myself a focal point for writing about the web and design and CSS and whatnot. And it's just evolved, really. It went on a sort of break when I founded the studio, because obviously you start an agency and everything goes into chaos mode for a while, so I just didn't have the bandwidth to be writing as much content. And then last year, we sort of had our little all hands, and I was like, I'd quite like to bring Pick a Lily back to life. Aww. Is anyone interested? And everyone was like, hell yeah, let's do it. So we just did like full redesign, full rebrand, the full kit and caboodle, and then I've always had in my mind, like, I want to publish courses and I want to publish, you know, much more sort of free education for people as possible, because I wouldn't be where I am without other people doing the same. Mm. So as I see it, it's just my duty to do the same now. And I wish that was still a sort of key principle in the web industry, because I think all of us who've been around the block a long time can attribute our success to like blogs that we read and other sort of free resources. Yep. So that's a big part of what we do, and it seems to have gone down really well over the last nearly 2 years now since we brought it back to life.
The URL it really is quite good. I'm going to get all the amount of I's and L's completely wrong. I'm going to try and get it right. It's Pick a Lily, PICCALIL.LI. I think I did that right. I'll put it in the show notes. It's a bit like spelling Mississippi.
I'm the only person on the planet who can spell Pick a Lily first time.
Yeah. It's, just bookmark it, put it in the browser and bookmark it somewhere. But there's a whole load of other stuff that you do as well, like, or at least have done. Like you've done courses for Google, you've got books that you've written and what have you. And it sounds, from the outside at least anyway, and this is kind of where this podcast is going, it sounds like you have this amazing life where work kind of is unending. There's this faucet of work. You turned it on sometime 12 years ago and it just kept on coming. Big clients, bigger clients, yay, rah, everything's fine. But the bit that got me to contact you, and I'm not that, I don't normally contact people out of the blue, so forgive me. But the bit that got me contacting you was a piece that you wrote not that long ago, end of November 2025, so 27th of November. It's on Andy's sort of personal website, I'm going to say. It's bell.bz. Links in the show notes. And it was called It's Been a Very Hard Year. And the bit that drew me to this was, like, I'm just drawn to authenticity and people who are quite willing to say, that was really bad. You know, we've had a bad time. Not this constant, I don't know, social media presence nonsense that we all seem to have fallen into the trap of never being able to say times are hard, never being able to say times are tough, always pretending like everything's okay. So you can go and read that, but would you mind sort of summarizing what the year 2025 has been like for you?
Yeah, it's been, so I'm glad you sort of referenced that what you see or what you perceive is different to the reality, because I think this is the case for a lot of people, especially based on, like, a lot of people go in touch and some inquiries, which is fantastic. Some really good inquiries, but mainly it was people saying thanks for writing it, because it's exactly what I'm experiencing at the moment.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to broadcast that, because I felt like it would affect my ability to, like, land work or whatnot. But yeah, the gist of the piece was, like, this year in terms of, like, I've been doing client services for the vast majority of my career, and I've never experienced, including the pandemic, never experienced, like, a lack of inquiries quite like 2025. And then inquiries that do come in, that they went against our sort of principles. So, like, one of those principles is we will not do promotional material for AI companies. Like, we just won't do it. We don't want to be associated with that. And the vast majority of the inquiries came from, like, startups who were effectively just a wrapper for OpenAI, finding some way to exploit users for profit. And we just weren't interested in any of that. And it felt like a lot of clients, the spend dropped considerably too, and the spending power. And I think the economies, plural, have really affected that for people. So, you know, high inflation and Donald Trump's tariffs haven't really helped businesses' spending power. And all of these factors are combined, and it became a very, very slow year. So we sort of pushed on Piccadilly with that extra time that we had. And based on, so I released a course last year, and so with all of our projections based on how that cost did, we were like, it'll be fine. We'll be absolutely fine. It's all good. Releasing two courses and it should be all good. But then that Black Friday event started and the numbers were telling a completely different story. So I just thought, I had that draft for quite a while in my Obsidian that I use for storing all these things.
Yeah.
And I sort of thought, I don't really want to publish it at the moment. And then I just saw that the way that it was trending on that, so I thought, okay, well, something's definitely going wrong and I don't know what's going wrong. I don't know, like, if we can get over the noise or anything like that. So I thought, I'm just going to publish it and I'm going to see what happens. And thankfully I did publish it, because it really sort of changed the trajectory of everything. And it's one of those things that I recommend to people. Like, what can you attribute success to? And I'll always say, without a doubt, blogging is at the root. Like, social media, been, you know, lucky to have a reasonably large following on social media, but that got nothing on writing blog posts and being, you know, getting good at writing. And that's just the thought process I had, really. It was like, what's always worked for me? Blogging. What should I do? Blog. And yeah, it worked out really well. And I think it actually told people a story that they probably didn't realize on, like, what our ethical boundaries were and what we were actually trying to do with Piccadilly and Set Studio. So yeah, it worked out good.
That is such an interesting story, because I can totally empathize with you not kind of wishing to click the publish button, because everything about the modern world seems to be always best foot forward, portray the kind of the perfect version of yourself, everything's fine, you know, and even if everything's not fine, just stiff upper lip, you know, just crack on. But you did exactly the opposite, and that is so interesting that was the lever that that it turns out many people were, that's what they needed to get in touch. Mm. Whether it was just to sort of commend you for your article, which is basically what I did, or if it was to, okay, now we've got an intuition about the kind of human being that you are. Isn't that like, I can't even get a purchase on that. I don't really know what I'm trying to say, but people got some intuition for you as an individual, perhaps, that then that then prompted them to get in touch, leave a comment, or to offer work in your direction. Wow.
Yeah.
Because when you read the piece, I feel it could have gone either way, right? But it went the beneficial way. That's great.
And that's what the sort of the worry was that it would go the opposite way. But then, I published it, and then we had an inquiry come in, and it was a really good inquiry that we sort of pursued, and they read the piece, and they were specifically looking for an agency that was anti-AI, because they'd been burnt by a couple of agencies who'd fully embraced it. And so they were specifically looking for ones that, there was zero risk that their brand was going to be, affected by the output, because, I mean, it's probably not a surprise to many people that have worked with agencies, but a lot of agencies have embraced it wholeheartedly because it's a shortcut, as I see it. And that's the sort of sad state of affairs, really. But a big part of running an agency is going against the perception of agencies, because so many do burn people, and so it's why we call ourselves a studio, not an agency.
As
an attempt to that. Yeah,
a couple of things I'm going to just draw out, if you don't mind, from what you've just said.
Yeah, of course.
First one is, I'm going to more or less guarantee that a bunch of people listening to this are exactly where you've been in the year 2025. Mm. And, it wasn't like 2024 or 2023. Maybe the phone is ringing less, or the email inbox is far less full than it's ever been. And, just a general sort of sense of head scratching, like, why? What's changed? We haven't done anything different. Everything's as normal. But, okay, just take note, it's not just you. People such as Andy, whose reputation is pretty stellar this side of the pond or wherever you may be listening to it, it happens, so you don't have to beat yourself over the head about it. But also, the curious bit that came out of that I didn't actually know was, I didn't realize that you not only didn't work for people that use AI, but you don't utilize AI in your processes. Firstly, is that sentiment true? Did I just say the right thing? You don't leverage AI tools to build the stuff you build?
No, we've experimented with it, absolutely. Yep. Like, with technologists, in the sort of earlier times, before it was stuffed down everyone's throats, like when it sort of came about, like, well, this feels like a useful thing, because you got documentation at your fingertips, and you've got the boring things like, oh, I've got to build a React component, right? Well, I can just get this tool to scaffold it for me and do all the boring bits for us. And we did give it a fair, a few different tools, a few different providers a sort of fair crack of the whip and like, want to really do it, and it was probably right about 40% of the time, which at the time we were like, it's very early, so we'll let them off. And then all the sort of harms started coming to light with AI. We talked about this before, like people using it for therapy, and the last thing you need if you're in the need of therapy is an agreement machine to be delivering that therapy to you. It's quite opposite of what an actual therapist will give you. And this, it's been directly attributed to suicides, it's been directly attributed to psychosis. And I don't think one thing that I always sort of say in these sort of situations is, what you're reading is a small percentage of the actuality, because a lot of people will report this and this won't be reported. So if you're seeing a handful of cases in the media, there's a hell of a lot more cases in reality. Mm. And It really, I mean, the cat's already fully out of the bag. You cannot put the toothpaste back in the tube, as it were, with AI. Like, it is fully there now. And even if all of the AI companies went out of business tomorrow, people can still run these models locally on the machines. So it's there forever. But the lack of responsibility is the thing that really, you know, boils my blood, as it
were.
Yeah. The lack of ethics and the lack of safety mechanisms put in place is scary, because we're all people who work in technology. So we sort of have the ability to look at technologies like this and sort of question them and really sort of analyze the usefulness. But a normal person doesn't have that. Don't realize it's a lot.
Yeah, what's kind of curious, though, is that there's this strange juxtaposition of you're into tech, therefore you must be into this aspect, this pathway in tech, the AI bit. You know, if you like working with computers and you're building things for the web, well, this thing is, you know, this is irresistible. This is absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
And I think it's totally all right to say, actually, you know what? There are bits of that that really trouble me. And anybody listening to this podcast over any length of time will know that is where I stand. There are bits of it that really trouble me. Just segue in slightly. So have you out of the post that you wrote and the responses that you've got, have you decided to rejig your studio? Have you decided to sort of offer a different marketing spin so that is a more prominent bit of what you do? Do you feel that there's a market for kind of like the no AI version of a web development agency?
Oh, for sure. I think it's something we've been sort of playing with internally, like messaging and stuff, but something we're going to be doing what we're going to be doing in 2026 is, so I used to do consultancy more than anything, so it's like CSS consultancy, but one thing we're going to start offering in the new year is basically giving companies a pathway away from it and surveying the damage for them that's already been sort of done on their sort of business and code bases, and helping them find a way out, because with any technology, once you go a certain way into it, it feels impossible to get out again. I think React is a really good example of that, where sort of a lot of companies would fully embrace it, and then they feel like the get out of that is too much work, so then they double down on it and then keep going. And I saw a lot of this in the CSS consultancy as well. Like, people would, teams would sort of like fully embrace Tailwind CSS, for example, and then they'd get to a point where it's becoming more problematic than helpful for them, and they'd bring me in because they're like, well, we don't know how to get out of this. So a lot of the time my work was sort of helping them create that sort of transition plan and sort of bringing a bit more education into the team and sort of skilling them up on the cascade and specificity and all that sort of stuff, like really sort of like nailing the basics into them and then giving them a route out. So it's like a transitional rollout of the framework. I feel like we can do the same with companies that have been burned by AI and there'll be a lot more than you imagine that are suffering from that. So it's something that we are going to do and probably position ourselves more and more as the anti-AI studio as well. I imagine people listening and thinking Andy's is completely lost his mind, but I think one of the things that AI's got going for it is the softest, easiest media treatment that you could probably imagine for a technology and a group of sort of billionaires that run it. I think if the media actually did their job with AI, I think we'd all be more terrified of it and much more critical of it. And it's something that's a post I'm working on at the moment. I normally do like a wrap-up post where it's like, okay, I did this many blog posts and this, that. This year I'm going for the jugular with AI, and I'm saying, look, we've got to take this thing on. We've got to take it on as a community and as an industry, because it's not doing its job. It's actually dangerous, and we do it. And a big part of that is countering the very easy treatment the AI technology system is getting in the media, and actually sort of prompting people, not that sort of prompting, but like prompting people to write about when it goes wrong for them, because it does go wrong for a lot of people. It comes up with bad results. It just destroys people's code bases. I was reading one when it deleted someone's entire root directory. I read
that.
Computer.
That was horrific.
We need more people to write about this stuff when it happens, because I think if you create this sort of huge volume of reality, I think it will help to sort of focus the mind, because I do empathize with people. Like, it feels like an exciting technology. It feels magic, but it's not. It's a probability machine that is, every response is a hallucination, not just the bad ones, all of them. It's effectively making things up in order to satisfy a prompt. And it's making those up off the huge amount of training data, most of which was stolen. So it's doing that in a qualified manner, but it will also always want to satisfy your prompt, hence why it'll just make things up in order to satisfy the prompt. I think one thing that would improve AI tenfold is if it couldn't find an answer in its training data.
I don't know the answer.
I don't actually know the answer.
Yeah.
But here's a link to some like a Google search results that I've just sort of tuned for you. So it's a bit more specific in the search query and stuff like that. So just to give you a helping hand, but I can't tell you the answer to that. I can't imagine that never happened though.
Did you ever hear it? This is such a weird like analogy, but did you ever hear of this thing called tulip mania? In the Netherlands, and I'm going to make up dates here, but let's say it was like the 1600s or something like that. There was this whole thing where tulips just became incredibly popular. I mean, absurdly popular. The value of a tulip was probably worth more than its weight in gold. And it just went on and on and on and on. And tulips became just like, you would ship tulips around the world rather than any other commodity if you possibly could, because their value was so high. Until this moment, this exact moment in time where it sounds like more or less everybody just turned around and went, they're tulips. They're just tulips, what the heck? And then suddenly their value kind of just descended. It went to more or less zero. It went to the value of a tulip, what it should actually be. And you can see, I guess there might be examples, Wall Street crash, that kind of thing. I have intuitions a bit along those lines with all of this. I have intuitions that we're just wrapped up in this hysteria about it. We're kind of ignoring all of the harms, often ignoring all of the mistakes. You know, when we ask it to do something and it comes back with something and you immediately find fault in it and say, hang on a minute, and then it goes, oh yeah, of course, you're right.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Here we go. And and you imagine that you employed 100 people in your organization, and reliably 100 of them every day lie to you. Just like, did you do this work? Oh yeah, that's all sorted. Yeah, I did that. Did you actually do it? No, I didn't do that work. They wouldn't last a minute. And yet we seem to have an endless capacity for forgiveness of this kind of thing. And I genuinely don't know where that capacity comes from. I think it's exceedingly exciting. You know, it possibly more exciting than a tulip even. but nevertheless, people seem to be beguiled. There's this promise that it's always going to get better. My understanding with LLMs, at least, is that the capacity is sort of the horizon for it getting better and better is receding further and further into the distance because it's no longer able to crunch any new human-made data, because it's done all that already. As you said, it's kind of taken the stuff off the internet and scraped it all. So the only thing it's got now is training on its own output.
Rubbish, it's unbelievable, isn't it? And it's if you want a case study of like a very good marketing campaign, then I think the AI industry is one of those. And I think it does help that you get sort of influential people in the industry will sort of constantly go on about how good it is and how helpful it is, and not show you the scratch pad, as it were, of all the times it goes horrifically wrong. Yeah. And you're right, the LLM stuff is plateauing, and there isn't much more they can do unless they build a lot more data centers. And it sort of, to me, that sort of suggests that the technology is incredibly inefficient and, you know, not as good as it probably could be and not being developed as well as it could be, because you get the, I think one real eye-opening moment for me was when the team behind DeepSeek in China, they matched, and near enough matched, I think it's ChatGPT-4 at the time.
Yes, I remember this story, yeah.
On old processors, and you could even run it on a laptop, if I remember rightly. Yeah. And to me, that sort of suggested, as always with Silicon Valley especially, that maybe the hype was slightly overhyped, as it were, because the sort of the quality of development that was delivered is probably not as high as you might imagine from Silicon Valley. Silicon Valley's always had this reputation of the best of the best work in there, but I can tell you from experience that's not the case.
Do you remember? It's really, we have such short memories in tech, don't we? But it really wasn't that long ago that Bitcoin, everybody's going to be using Bitcoin. We're all going to be using Bitcoin to buy everything. And of course, we must buy as many as we can right away to satisfy the need to make more Bitcoin. And that just kind of silently went away. Nobody's talking about the NFTs. Pictures of monkeys, terribly important to have pictures of monkeys at great expense. You know, that's
only a sensible person spends £200,000 on a picture of a monkey.
Very good. And then Web 3.0, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're kind of quickly forgotten, you know. We're moving on now. We've got the next thing. And I feel that AI has the capacity to be that. You know, but you can imagine in 2 years' time, you and I will come back. There'll be robots everywhere. AI will genuinely have taken over and be absolutely amazing, and we'll be, we're slightly wrong there. But
willing to be proven wrong on this. So I'm feeling very confident in my opinions. Yeah.
But I don't have those intuitions. And all of the stuff that you said, the bit that never really gets talked about, the environmental impact, the fact that we do really genuinely seem to have a user base of, in many cases, in the part of the world where I live, at least, you know, young people are kind of getting into using AI for needs that would be best provided by humans. Let's put it that way, you know, mental health and things like that. But in the absence of that in the real world, they turn to these because they sort of simulate that. But the outcomes don't feel great. There's this whole AI thing called the alignment problem. And the alignment problem is, you know, basically, is it aligned to humanity's best interests? And I don't really see much evidence of that. I see an alignment to billionaires' capacity to be wealthier than they already are, but not a lot else. So
the thing is for me, right, is the I think one of the fundamental problems with LLMs in general, and I think this is what's really sort of kneecapping them as well, is the way that they're programmed to respond is to be agreeable at all times. So there's the meme, isn't it? You're absolutely right. Because that's where it'll come back. When you correct it, it'll be like, you're absolutely right. The thing that's always confused me about that, though, is that people saw that immediate agreement and thought, wait a minute, what else are you lying about? That doesn't seem to clock. But then for, people that don't work in this industry, I mean, one thing is there's no sustainable, profitable model for AI at the moment at all. Hundreds of billions of dollars have been sort of blasted at this problem. And in order to make that sort of money back, it has to be incredibly popular in the mainstream market and paid for by people in the mainstream market. But the vast majority of people in the mainstream are actually using it for free. And it's probably not giving them enough use to warrant paying for it also. And I think the sort of the era of subsidized pricing that's in place is not going to last too much longer either. So I think people now, say you pay $10 a month, for example, you can live with that. But if that suddenly turns into $50 to $100 a month, that starts to really sort of question, is this giving me that much value? I just can't see a pathway forward for it. I listened to Ed Zitron.
Oh, yeah.
He's a journalist.
He's fantastically entertaining, isn't he, when he speaks?
Yeah. He seems to be hyper-focused on AI right now.
And not as well.
and hyper. And he's a AI marketer's worst nightmare.
Oh, he's got all the numbers. Yeah.
He has the stats and he does unbelievable levels of deep research on this stuff. And I think if you're starting to question AI, or even if you're listening to this now and you're like, these guys are talking absolute rubbish, like it's the best thing ever, listen to the last even the last 6 months of Ed's podcast, and especially his monologues that he does. And then come back and tell me that we're talking rubbish.
Yeah, he's been...
Because I think he'll convince you.
Yeah, he really has been looking at it. Mm. Like, the financials of it, I think, is fair to say that's kind of his where he's most acerbic and most effective.
Yeah.
He looks at the numbers, and I have no capacity to keep up with that because, you know, that's not my thing. But this is what he does. He digs into the numbers. And if we're to believe that he's true, and I've no reason to believe that he's not... the numbers really don't stack up. It is much like we've seen in the past, you know, where we've had gold rushes that then kind of collapse. Mm. I think he's used examples of like the railroad in the United States where it, lots of people invested a huge amount of money off the strength of loads of people traveling by rail all over the place. And these people just never did travel by rail. So the whole thing kind of collapsed and, you know, it struggled on and is what it is today. But there are examples in history where these kind of things collapse, and it does appear that a huge amount of money has gone in, but all based upon future promises of what will be achieved. And generally the gold standard seems to be AGI, this sort of artificial general intelligence, which can kind of do everything, which to me is kind of the most scary. If anybody actually does do that.
I mean, the thing, like, I used to be mildly scared of that, but then when I see the incompetence coming from Silicon Valley, I think, nah, it's never happening. Just like, I don't think quantum computing's ever really going to happen, or certainly not in the next couple of decades at least. I think it's something that will come, I think, but it's certainly not going to come off the back of LLMs. That's for sure.
I'm really interested by the pivot that you've done, though. I mean, in the same way that, you know, everybody could go to IKEA and get bargain basement furniture, there's an awful lot of people who don't want IKEA furniture. You know, they want the sort of craftsman built, you know, bespoke, artisan approach to whatever it is that they're doing. And maybe at the moment we're just kind of trying to figure out where humans fit into this jigsaw puzzle, and, you know, what the pay rates are going to be in the future. But I can't help but commend you for what you're, that approach, that idea of like humans first, no AI.
Yeah.
Like I said, we'll come back in 2 years' time, we'll both be destitute. But until that moment, I feel like you've got a really interesting niche to speak to. You've got a really interesting set of people that you'd want to speak to. And dare I say it, this is going to sound awful. Dare I say it, they kind of strike me as the people that I would personally wish to work alongside, if you know what I mean. They kind of see the value in what they're providing to you and that you're providing back to them. There's a nice kind of symbiosis there. There's a bit of humanity injected back into the work, which I think is being lost. Gosh.
Yeah, I think that a big part of the thing that we do as an agency is like we lean really heavily on web standards and progressive enhancement and building experiences that work for everyone, like regardless of like the device capabilities, the network capabilities. And that, if you're a company that's in a, you know, you're turning over sort of a few million a year and you can see there's a pathway to sort of grow, there's no safer bet than leaning into the web platform because if you're going to grow at an exponential speed, if you grow on the back of, for example, like Next.js or sort of like heavy framework usage, you're going to introduce a lot of technical debt that's going to be very hard to pay off as your team grows. It narrows your hiring pool too, which is always not very helpful. There's always been this attitude in tech for the last few years of, we use React because it makes it easier to hire, but it makes it easier to hire bad developers, in my experience, where if you we put people on this sort of pathway of we're going to lean into the platform because you can build in iterations and you can build in cycles and you're building on a really solid foundation by leaning into it and simplifying things. And it seems to resonate with the right sort of clients for us.
Yeah.
Like, I think clients that can see further than their end of the nose, it resonates really well with them. Like when you have that conversation with them and where they're thinking sort of 5-10 years ahead rather than what's happening this year and next year. It's what's coming down the line for them. And it always works by putting them on that pathway.
It's so curious to me that all of these kind of frameworks and what have you came around. You know, obviously, you know, I'm using WordPress, which is is definitely a sort of, I don't know, path that you go down and, you know, you get into that ecosystem, you use it and what have you. But one of the things that came out of this podcast was with David was the web as a platform is fast approaching, you know, it can do almost everything now that you imagined that you would wish it to do. Anything that you, well, not anything, but a significant amount of the things that you would have relied on some framework to do is now being built directly into browsers. The browsers are talking to each other. They're building stuff in concert with each other. You know, there may be a month drift here or there, but broadly speaking, they're adopting everything at the same time. And you can go and check out those open sources to see where they've got to with those kind of things. And banking on that feels like the safest ground you've possibly got.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, it's getting near 20 years for me now. And I've seen a lot of cycles in that time. And the only thing that hasn't changed in that whole time is that the web wins every time. And the web platform always wins also. So it feels, I think there's a benefit in that. So say, for example, you're a freelancer or an agency. There's a real benefit in learning a lot of these technologies because clients will come wanting these technologies and sometimes you just have to serve that. I think WordPress is actually a really good example of that. Like, clients will come specifically for WordPress and they're right to do so. And then with that WordPress though, I think anyone who's worked with WordPress for a long time will tell you that relying on a lot of plugins, for example, is not the best way to get a high performing website because plugins will inject all sorts of nasties. I know the Gutenberg editor wasn't very popular in the WordPress community. And I think it still isn't. But I think that sort of shifted the balance a little bit. Where, especially when the full site editing stuff came about, where there was a push towards the lighter weight footprint. But so sticking with the WordPress thing, like building your own custom theme, for example, was a much better way of having a high performing WordPress website. Mm-hmm. Like the Set Studio website used to be on WordPress, and it was a lot faster than a lot of static sites because we embraced using, you know, building the theme from scratch.
Minimal, stripping it out.
Absolutely minimal, yeah. There's nothing in there. We riffed off, it's from the olden days now, but Elliot J. Stock's Starkest theme.
Oh, gosh, there's a name. Yeah.
That was my gateway into WordPress, was the Starkest theme.
Did you read the .NET magazine by any chance? For you? Did you?
I mean, there's a little side note here, Nathan. We'll get into this maybe another time, but I used to be a professional .NET mag troll also. but it's because me and Ollie Lindberg are friends with each other, so I used to see like very weird quotes in the little tweets bit, and it was just me messing around.
I remember once going into a shop and buying a copy of .NET, and the lady who was behind the counter, she was obviously incredibly smart. She said to me, "You're buying a magazine, dear, about the internet. Can't you get it on the internet?" And I remember thinking, she's right.
She's absolutely right. Yeah, like there's a reason it didn't like
it
survive.
Did not survive. Yeah,
but yeah, and that's that era. And so we came at that project like at the time, whereas like let's use Starkers as our base. And even though the theme was however many years old since it'd been changed, we didn't really have to do much to get it up to speed with WordPress. I think that's one of the strengths of WordPress as well as how backwards compatible it is, right? So we brought it back in line with sort of modern WordPress standards. And then yeah, the site was unbelievably fast. The other reason that we moved platform from WordPress to, so it's now on Astro, is we just preferred the authoring process of working in Astro.
Interesting.
So,
yeah.
And we wanted to just sort of test some ideas that we had for that platform as well. And there's no better way to test ideas than on your own company website. So we did that as part of like a redesign effort last year, but still, like, it doesn't perform any better than the WordPress site.
That's curious.
You like the authoring process more.
So that's, you know.
But it's just the templating's nicer, and it feels easier to work with. But mainly because we don't do much WordPress anymore, so we're not as sort of in tune with it as we probably were in the olden days. But that's always the case, really. It's just lean into the platform and strip as much stuff out as you possibly can, and you'd be amazed at how fast things get all of a sudden.
It is interesting in the WordPress space, this whole full-site editing thing. So we've got classic themes, which are the old version, if you like, of themes, and we've got the full-site editing, or site editing, as it's now called. It hasn't taken off in the way that I think the leadership had hoped that it would. The idea, I think, was that it would, you know, skyrocket and everybody would move over. However, the chatter at the minute is it seems to be pivoting slightly in that direction. I can't be confident that that's the way it'll go, but it does seem that that interface, that way of doing things, so templates inside of some sort of UI that you can interact with without having to open an IDE and things like that is definitely sort of taking off a little bit. But it's a big stretch to get people prepared for what that means and how different it is. Yeah, but it's common, amazing, and it's quicker, that's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm glad that they're in that. I think the Gutenberg thing was always slightly confusing at the time, because like WordPress is like famous for its community, right? And the effort that the WordPress organization put into the community and work with the community. And I found it baffling that they would sort of force a feature into WordPress that was designed for people probably not in the WordPress community that they interacted with on a daily basis. And it always felt to me like it should have been on by default, because they were obviously targeting non-technical users with it, and that makes total sense. But, you know, they were directly trying to challenge Squarespace and Wix, etc., weren't they? But in the settings of WordPress, there should have been a configuration where you could say, I do not want this. I want to carry on using just WordPress.
Yeah, you had to go out and find third party, or, you know, you could write your own code, but typically it was like,
exactly,
find a third party plugin which would sort of disable Gutenberg. They're still very popular, actually.
Yeah, weirdly enough.
Those kind of things are still very popular. I'm a big fan, but it's absolutely not for everybody.
No, of course not.
Sadly, we've reached the sort of 55-minute mark, which is probably where we should knock it on the head. But I do want to just make a big call to, the thrust of what we talked about. I think I would summarize it as follows. You know, if you had a tough 2025, firstly, you're not alone. Even, you know, the big hitters like Andy, it wasn't an easy year. But also, I suppose the second message coming out of it is if you've got intuitions that are not necessarily 100% laser focused on the future of AI and how that can make you more efficient, and you want to pivot into something a little bit more the year 2020 before all of that fun started, you have a model in Andy. You could go and check out what he's doing, and no doubt writing blog posts about it in the future. He did say before the call started, I hope this is okay to read into the record, he did say that he's going to like pull out the big guns in the year 2026.
Yes.
He's going to take aim at AI and start firing on all cylinders, trying to dismantle that edifice.
Be more Ed. Yeah.
So watch
Absolutely.
This. Watch this.
Yeah,
We'll see how it goes. But
I've been playing nice for the past year or so.
But, you know.
And a lot of people will still associate me with being a massive AI Craig. But, I'm not going
to
hold back. Yeah.
To be the authentic you. Andy, where can we find you? Apart from the bits and pieces that we mentioned at the top of the show, is there any sort of particular place you push people?
So I tend to, in terms of social, I spend the vast majority of my time on Blue Sky. So my handle on there is bell.bz, and that's more so my personal site, bell.bz. Mm-hmm. And then on there, you can see links, and there's just links to everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll make it much easier for you rather than me reading a lot of URLs.
Okay.
Out.
Yeah, I'm glad that you've done that.
You won't draw me on reading out particularly.
Often we end the show with quite a lengthy list of URLs, which nobody can remember because it's an audio podcast and most people are doing vacuuming or washing the dishes.
Driving.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But anyway, I'll link in the show notes to that, and Andy is no doubt available, and you too can join the AI bandwagon and try to pull it off the rails in the year 2026. Andy Bell, thank you for chatting to me.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, thanks for listening to that. I hope that you enjoyed it. If you did and you want to leave us a comment, we would love that. Head to wpbills.com, search for episode number 457 and leave us a comment there. Don't forget, we'll be back next Thursday for a podcast episode. We've also got our This Week in WordPress episode every Monday, 2 p.m. UK time. And if you want to get in touch about advertising and getting your product or service in front of a WordPress-specific audience, wpbuilds.com/advertise, or just drop me an email, admin@wpbuilds.com. Okay, we will be back next week. You stay safe. Have a good week. Bye-bye for now.